Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. This evening should be really a wonderful evening of conversation, of knowledge as we acquire a lot of different things that I believe we'll explore that we haven't explored before. In the sector of music here, we always talk about the arts, and a lot of the arts that we've covered have been performing arts of dance, of theater, plays, and musicals. But now we really are going to be talking about the voice. And being a student of a vocal instructor, Dr. Chauncey Northern of Carnegie Hall, I think he would really be proud that this conversation is going to be happening. Before I do that, though, I have to say that I have to take a moment and acknowledge the passing of someone who contributed so much to my life and career earlier in my career. When I was living in Los Angeles a couple of decades ago, I was privileged to be able to be signed to and work with a genius in the media of television and comedy, and his name is Norman Lear. And Norman Lear was absolutely the most wonderful person to work for, work with, to learn from. He listened. He was absolutely the most gentle giant and genius that I've ever met. He treated me like a little princess, and I thank him for that. And I will miss him as he passed away yesterday at the age of 101 and gave us so much. And as I've said so many times, that he will not rest, because Norman probably went to his office, whether it was in his an outside office or in his home, every single day that he was able to. So he won't rest, but he will have peace. And I send him that, and I send him my love, and I send him my gratitude for the rest of my life. We did a show called 704 Hauser, which was the sequel to All Family, a black family living in Archie Bunker's house. And it was a privilege to be a part of that lineage. So with that, I say I will love and miss you always, Mr. Norman Lear. Now, after that, we have a very exciting evening in front of us. I have two women here who I believe are extraordinary in two very different ways. I'm going to introduce them one at a time. I will tell you that the first woman that I am introducing has been in my life for a couple of years, because she belongs to a couple of organizations that I belong to. She's an award-winning playwright. She is a very, very innovative woman. She has a strong theater background that she is very humbled about. And her connection to my second guest is that she is on the board of an organization called Melodia Women's Choir. And it is, I think, extraordinary for me to talk about a playwright who has now crossed over into a very musical-based organization. This is the choir's 20th anniversary. And its executive director, who's Jennifer Clark, and the artistic director, who's Cynthia Powell, have led this organization to be able to sustain itself and grow and offer competitions. And in those competitions, we will discover that my second guest is an award-winning composer who has been honored by this organization. But I will say that there are people, Miss Cindy Cooper, who are from O, who are from the League of Professional Theater Women, and who I believe are from Melodia Women's Chorus, who really choir, who really are excited about hearing your voice a little bit tonight. So before we go any further, I'd like you to say hello to the guests that are on my board and to those who are listening to blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, the number 2. Cindy Cooper?
Hello, Lenny. Hello, Zaneta. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy you're doing this. It's very exciting for me. And even though I know you from theater, I think being on the board of Melodia Women's Choir, which I've been doing for 20 years with Cynthia Powell as the artistic director, has been one of the best parts of my life. It's like the place where I get the most satisfaction. And, you know, theater can be hard. I know music is hard too. And in fact, for women composers, maybe even more difficult than for women playwrights. But just as a person who can, I'm the audience person in the music world, and I just enjoy it. I just love it. And at their concerts, many of my theater friends come along, and they like, it's just like a respite, you know, to just experience the emotions and the range of voices and the colors of the music that Melodia brings to the fore, and just to experience it like through listening and your body and your thoughts, and it's such a joy. So we have Melodia learned early on that it's hard to find repertoire for women's voices because this is music. This isn't like, you know, I know some women's choirs are like labor choirs or something, but this is a classically based choir. And I don't even really know if there's a right term for the type of music that they do, because it is classically based, but a lot of it is written by contemporary composers like Zaneta. So sometimes it's called art music, or I don't know, new classical, but it's very rich and complex, and they rehearse endlessly. They rehearse a lot for each concert. The singers all have to audition, so they have to be very highly accomplished. I mean, we're talking about New York, so we have people who are professional, some of them, and semi-professionals in the choir. And so, but to be able to take works by composers and to bring them to life, to bring women's voices to life with such a vibrancy is really exciting. So, but one of the things they discovered is that there only 5% of the classical music is that's performed today is by women composers. So that's kind of a deficit. 85% of the concerts around the world have no women composers. So to kind of build that up, and to it helps other women's choirs as well, to build up the repertoire, Melodia started devoting a lot of attention to commissioning women composers. And this is the 10th, Zaneta is the 10th commissioned woman composer. So they run a competition, and people submit materials, and an artistic team listens to them all and, you know, like looks for who they think will be good and a good fit for Melodia. And I just say one other thing. Cynthia Powell, who's the artistic director and the conductor, she really also brings out the levels and the colors in music. And so kind of it was a perfect match for Zaneta's writing.
Well, Cindy, thank you. Especially since Zaneta and I will talk about later how much you didn't think that you had anything to say. Thank you so much. Thank you. That's a wonderful introduction for Melodia, for people to understand the existence of such an organization. And now I really want to go to my other guest. Zaneta Robles is Dr. Zaneta Robles. I think a special person that we should respect because she is in a field, like Cindy has just said, that is difficult. Those of us who are women know that in every field it's difficult in order to be able to have your position in the playing field. But now Dr. Robles is an award-winning Black composer. She's a vocalist and a teacher, and she was born and raised in Southern California. Where she lives, I really must ask her. It's the occupied land of the Gabrielino Tonga people. That is going to be a conversation in itself. But let's go into her background. I want to say that her compositions have been performed by professional ensembles, choruses or choirs, educational institutions, churches, and individuals worldwide, and they have been published by multiple musical firms. Now, especially the Stuart Robles music. One of the things that I have to emphasizes that she is a soprano soloist and an ensemble singer. And I don't think that people know the significance of that, because what it means is that she's, for me, and she will correct me if I've given a misinterpretation, but my background will say that she knows how to carry the lead of solo piece, or the lead in a piece in which it is backed by the ensemble, but she also has the ability to know how to sing in an ensemble environment. And that takes a lot of training, takes a lot of listening, hearing, understanding how to blend, all of these other kind of things. But we'll get into that a little bit later. I really want to talk about some of the awards that she has. She has the L.A. Artist of the Future Award, the Charles Dolo Coker Jazz Award, and the NAACP ActSO National Gold Medal for Music Composition. So she holds a Doctor's of Music Arts degree from the University of Southern California at the Thornton School of Music, and a master's and a bachelor's degree. There is also a piece that I'm going to ask both Cindy and Zaneta about, a piece that they both mentioned in their summations, and it's called The Circle Never Ends, but we'll talk about that. But before I go to that, I just want you to welcome Dr. Zaneta Stuart Robles, and please say hello to the audience. It is my honor to have you as a guest this evening.
Thank you so much for the generous introduction. Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to be here, and I've never done anything like this before, and it's quite an honor. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our honor to have you. You are, the audience should know that you are in another time zone. You are in Southern California, so we are reaching across the country to solicit all of the information that you can give us. But tell me now about occupied land that you live on. Tell me a little bit about that before we get into all the wonderful musical things that I have to ask you about. Tell me about
that. Sure. So there's a trend, or not a trend, but a movement and a need, actually, right now to recognize the harmful colonial histories of the you know, many places, you know, that we live in our nation.
Mm-hmm.
The United States of America is a country that began as a country of colonies, and places where people already were living were colonized, and then those people were systematically removed or killed or forced to assimilate with the new culture and the new way of what it means to be an American. But that's not how it was. And so now there is an effort on the part of many artists to pay attention to our past, to acknowledge the harmful colonial histories of the places where we live, to name and say the truth about the people that are our ancestors in terms of the lands and waters where we reside, our natural caretakers and the traditional caretakers of our lands and waters. And so that's what I do, and I just always try to include that acknowledgement in my bio, just to say that, you know, where most people will say, you know, I could just say I live in Southern California, but I also want to uplift the people that were here before it was Southern California, and those are the Gabrielino Tongva people. They are still here, and all of the people are still here that our country thought we got rid of. They did not go anywhere. They're here, and they are gaining and growing realizing and reclaiming their space. And so I'm proud of, through my work as a composer and as a musician, I've been humbled and I've been privileged to be able to meet some wonderful people of indigenous ancestry who are actively reclaiming their lands and speaking up about their people being present, being here, being active, being transformational in terms of the impact that they're having on their communities, really making a, you know, lifting up their voices and starting to be more widely recognized across the country as having a place here as the original caretakers of the lands and waters here. So that's why the land acknowledgement, because they were here first.
Well, I thank you for it, because, you know, what you said earlier is that most people just will say, I live in Southern California, and they don't get specific about it. And because you did, what happens is that you were able to inform us about a piece of culture and history that is not as well known as it should be. And I thank you
right.
for that. Because that's how we learn, that's how we grow, that's how we acknowledge all the history that is American history.
You're welcome.
And now, I have you a couple of questions. You said that you try to I don't want to misquote you. Let me ask it this way: Did your living environment in any way influence some of the music compositions that you compose? Do you, in some way, do you try to bring about the history of that in your compositions in order for people to be more aware of that?
That's a great question. Yeah. The short answer is no, not really. I think there's room for artistic exploration in that subject. But it would have to be from my perspective as, you know, myself being a black woman here, you know, my ancestors came here not against their will. You know, they weren't, they're, you know, my ancestors weren't indigenous. They weren't the colonizers. They were, you know, they were enslaved peoples. And so I have another perspective that I'm focused on in terms of my own ancestry, that is not the story of the indigenous people that lived here before. It's my hope, and it's you know, my dream is that those who have identities that are related to, you know, or indigenous ancestries will feel called, will feel moved, will be inspired to tell their story through their art. And so I'm, you know, that's one of the things that I hope my art and my work does is, you know, I hopefully will inspire another generation of people who have that story to tell, to go ahead and tell it through their art, through their words, through their, you know, music, everything. But they have to be the ones to tell the story. And the work that we do, if we're doing it right, you know, by being inclusive, by being mindful, by being, by considering diversity and equity, hopefully those people will see a place for themselves in the landscape of what we do. And then they will tell their own story that way. And I'll just get out of the way for that to happen.
Oh, well, you inspire those people by telling the story of your ancestry and our ancestry.
I hope so.
We both
are
enslaved individuals, and inspire people to think, well, if that story is told, I have a story to tell. So in a way,
right,
you do influence it. It's just that it may not be as direct about it. So now that I'm on that body, tell me about your background. This is a place where you live now. Where did it all begin for you, Zenaida? Where did it all begin?
Yeah, it began right here. I was born, raised, and educated here in Southern California, kind of all over the place, from the South Bay to the West Side to the San Gabriel Valley, where I currently live with my family. And I work in Studio City and in Pasadena. I work in Studio City as a teacher, as a high school teacher, and in Pasadena as a church music director. And so I've been, you know, I think early on I sort of, you know, I always knew I was going to be a musician. I had this, I don't know where I heard when I was young, you know, probably 7 or 8 years old, somewhere in some conversation or maybe on TV, I heard the term doctor of music. Once I heard that term, I didn't know who it was referring to, but I said, that's me. That's what I'm going to be. I am that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of come along, and I did all my schooling out here. And I think I, you know, had a dream, maybe a dream or, you know, a thought about studying elsewhere, you know, wanting to travel and maybe living in a different place, but that didn't happen for me. And I ended up doing all of my schooling here, my bachelor's from Cal State Long Beach and my master's from Cal State Northridge and my doctorate from University of Southern California, USC, the Thornton School of Music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that, you know, I'm a very spiritual person, and I think that, you know, the universe or the spirit or God, whatever you want to call it, had a plan for me to be here. This is where I needed to be, and I'm really, really happy to say that I've been able to thrive here as a professional singer, as a musician, as a soloist, as an ensemble singer. I sang with the Los Angeles Master Chorale for many years, which is like the premier choral ensemble, kind of the choir equivalent to like the LA Phil. So that was a huge honor. Got to perform. I've performed in all kinds of amazing venues, from Disney Hall to the Hollywood Bowl. So living and working in Southern California has really worked out for me. And I pivoted, thanks to COVID, I pivoted towards composition because I had a lot of time. And I decided, you know, let me sit down and put some of this stuff down. And then the world just fell apart. And I feel like that there was a space for me that was created, and that's what kind of brought me here today. And I'm grateful for the journey that I'm still on.
Well, I think, you know, you bring up a very interesting point in that there are many of us, I believe, who during the COVID height of the COVID period. Became more creative than we were before that. because it didn't force us. It just gave us an opportunity to say, okay, now what can I make out of this lemon?
Right.
Can I make some out of this lemon? And with that, I did want to mention too. So excited about talking about you. The many places that you have been involved as a vocalist, with Glee, Frozen. you've done a lot of the movies, and to me, my love of music started when I was three. Mm. So, it's very interesting to meet someone who has a similar path, and when I say that, a similar passion for music. Now, I also have gravitated to theater and television and film, but as an actor, but it's different. And I don't know how to ask really this question, but maybe I can halfway ask it, and then you can wholeway answer it. Because what is it about music? And Cindy, you can chime in also, because you said something about it earlier about what music does, because we're both in theater and we both, you know, you're a playwright. What is it that music does that almost hypnotizes you when you're around it and in it, and what it makes it so universal? What do you think about that?
Well, I think I can't wait to hear Cindy's answer.
Yes.
But for me, I mean, I'm as a musician, you know, for me, it's very primal. Like, it just I think that we all, you know, kind of gravitate to something. Maybe maybe we all gravitate to something. You know, whether it's in the arts or in other things, other disciplines, sciences. You know, but I think that, you know, you don't have to gravitate to it in a way that leads to a professional, you know, career in order to be touched by it. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the music is something that many people derive not only pleasure but comfort. It's a means of expression. I mean, that's part of being human, is to be able to express yourself and to make meaning out of life. And I think that's what music does in a way that other mediums can't. I mean, other mediums are able to do it in other ways, and sometimes we need that way. Sometimes we need it to be, we need meaning made for us, so we need to create meaning out of, you know, theater or out of visual art or out of, you know, other disciplines and mediums. But music has its own unique way of touching us and helping us understand place in the universe. I just think that's magical. I think it's sacred. I think it's beautiful, and I think that's why, you know, there's so many different kinds of music. There's so many different types of musicians. There's so many different ways that we make music, either together or as soloists. We experience what it's like to support each other when we are making music. We experience what it's like to shine, you know, as a star. We have all of these different parallel experiences from a musical perspective that help us understand our place in the world, you know, as humans. That's one way to see it as far as why music touches us so deeply.
So deeply. Cindy?
Well, I think Sineda did a great job of explaining. I mean, from an audience perspective, I would say, you know, it just allows you to kind of tap a different part of your brain that goes straight to your emotions, and to turn off the thinking, the outer world. There's a lot going on, you know, but just to sort of be there and have that spiritual experience. And after this concert, the concert was called The Circle Never Ends, and Zaneda's piece is called From the Stone Age. I want to say my life is a stone.
But, yes, that too.
Yeah. But it's called From the Stone Age, and people came out of the concert, and that's one of, you know, a number of pieces, but people came out and they said I was crying through the concert, you know, because it's just such a relief just to kind of listen and to see the singers. I mean, all these diverse people, you know, the point of the choir is many voices, one sound. And
yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of just has a beautiful aura to it.
Well, I find, you know, I have most of my friends are teachers, because that was one of the things that I wanted to be very early in life, until I discovered a little bit more about theater in my first year in college. And one particular friend that I have that's going to be in the panel next year, and with next week, and was on the panel last year, was an educator. Diane Wilson is a composer also. And one of the things that fascinates me is the, and it always has, because I haven't conquered it the way you all have, is the whole concept of theory. And it's people who have that, I think, ability to pick up a piece of paper and read it so much like you're reading a newspaper. Now, if you do it a lot, it can become methodical like you, but I think that there are those of you who it's like an instinctive thing that you have. I don't know if people know what I'm talking about, music theory and the concept of all of that. But do you understand what I'm saying, Zenaida, about
the importance? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's music theory, it can be the bane of your existence if you're in school trying to study it.
It's like gymnasts. Those gymnasts who are double jointed have it a little bit over the rest of the people who are not. Those people who have that instinctive lead on theory can do a lot of what you do, music theory. I don't even have to ask. I know that you read. I know that, you know, you're comfortable with all that because of the things that you are capable of doing, teaching one place, going to the chorus, going from ensembles, going to solos, all of those things. If right now, if you had to talk to a young person who is interested in music, what would you tell them about music theory and its importance?
That's a good question. Wow. I think to anyone or a young person or anybody, a not-so-young person, who's interested in pursuing the fruits of the labor that is studying music really wanting to have a next-level connection and an understanding of how music works, and also of how to communicate your music or that music with another person or with other people or with an ensemble. That's what theory that's what music notation enables us to do. So music you're talking about notation, the whole theory developed around, you know, once we got this notation in place, and once you have notation, then you have it's a tool, and, you know, the tool has to be, you have to learn how to use the tool, right? But it's really important, you know, I would also say, especially now, you know, we're in an age where we're starting to recognize that we need to be flexible and adaptable and versatile. We need to be so versatile. And we're realizing that, you know, decades ago, maybe not even so long ago, but there was a time, that, you know, for many, many decades, maybe even centuries, that the only, like, high art music, or the highest form of music you could do, or was classical music and music that was written down. You know, it was the music that where you could apply the theory, you know, to this tool that we have, which is music notation, and the written music, that was the supreme kind of music. Well, we know now that that's not necessarily true. Music does not have to be written down in order for it to be viable and valid and powerful, extremely powerful. music can, you can have very powerful rote learn music, improvised music, all kinds of music. I mean, you know, I don't have to talk about, you know, all the amazing jazz artists and, you know, other artists from all over the world that are creating music that's not written down. So that's what I would say to an aspiring musician is you're talking about acquiring the skill to use a tool in order to create and share the music that you're doing. That's what it's for. That's what the theory is all about. It's so that we can use this tool so that the people that are performing our music, because it's sort of a group endeavor. It's like, you know, my music, I could have my music all up in my head for myself, but if I want somebody else to do it and I want it to get out into the world so it can be recreated and synthesized and someone to play it, I have to be able to use the tool to write it down so that person knows what I'm talking about. And that's what theory and notation does for us. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so tell me now, what is it like? I already know the limitations, the challenges of being a woman of color in the art. All right. Specifically breaking it down, all of the different sectors of the arts have different challenges. You are a musician, a soloist, and an ensemble performer and artist, but as a composer, what mm-hmm. are the challenges that you think are ahead of you? And what have you experienced, what challenges have you experienced and to get to where you are right now? You talked about COVID and then COVID being a turning point for you because it kind of illuminated the opportunity for you to then explore this. So what were the beginnings of it? What were the challenges? How did you go from where you were before COVID, what you were doing before COVID, to that, and what did you have to overcome?
I think that I think about how, you know, I think in some ways, without the opportunity to sort of incubate, which is sort of what many of us did, we were sort of incubating. That's what we were doing in our homes by ourselves. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of time, you know, to just kind of cook, you know. I feel like without that help, help, to be honest, I don't know that I would be doing what I'm doing as a composer because I think that one of the biggest challenges that I experienced before I was, you know, even really composing, but when I was actively hustling as a performing artist, you know, as a singer, as a session singer for film scores, as a soloist, as an ensemble singer, you know, trying to get all the gigs, you're just trying to survive. You're just trying to stay above water. And if there's no room, there's very little room to think deeply about creating, you know, to think deeply about creating. You know, my work, my livelihood was around synthesizing other people's creations. And I got good at it because I had a skill. I was able to use the tool, can use sheet music, and I can use these skills that I've developed to interpret this tool in order to provide a performance that, you know, is professional caliber. So that's my training, right? There's no room for me, for my voice, you know. And so once we all got stuck up in the incubator that was COVID, I had a lot of time to just listen to myself, you know, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, and also that voice, you know, the art, obviously it goes without saying that the arts, especially singers, were heavily impacted in a negative way. I mean, some people's entire careers just were devastated. So there was no singing. There were no ensembles. Nobody was gathering in a place trying to open their mouths and blow on each other. Nobody was doing that. So everybody had to pivot. And so in a way it sort of forced me to sort of pivot in a, you know, you just kind of start becoming an artist. You start growing, and this art, this compositional voice kind of started to take shape in a way that I didn't expect it to. And I didn't compose with necessarily the intent to become a composer. I was just like, you know, I have to get this out. I'm a human. I have to use this medium as this is my form of expression, because I can't sing. I can't sing with people. I can't make music with people. So how else can I express myself? Well, that music composition became that for me. It became my medium when my other medium was taken from me. But it enabled me to overcome that challenge of not having any space and any time for me to explore that on my own. There's a lot of fear that comes from spending time just honing your own thoughts and your own craft and using a medium to create something new with the hope that somebody else is going to perform it. Like that's very, very, it's still an intimidating thought. That's a challenge that I have to fight every day. You know, I'm putting notes on a piece of paper and thinking, you know, who's going to want to sing this? Who's going to want to play this? And it's a miracle every time it happens that somebody wants to sing and play or my music, because, you know, they're spending their time digesting and you know, programming themselves with something that I wrote. There's just no higher honor. So I have to constantly battle that self-doubt and that insecurity, mm-hmm. that tells me there wasn't any space for me before. Why do I think now there is? You know, that's the reality.
I have to interject for a minute.
Yes.
Lots of people are going to want to sing your music. Lots of people are going to want to play it. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It has such depth and, you know, richness to it. And this choral piece came, you know, has three instruments on it, violin, flute, my favorite, and piano. So it's not just the voices. It's just all so beautifully coordinated and with this lovely poem. And that just takes everything so deep. So a lot of people, I like to say that we introduced you to New York City, because I think you were in New York State before, but we introduced you to New York City. But
thank you.
You. You know, you belong in the canon, so I'm rooting for you.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
I think that's fabulous, you know, and I think it is, though, the questioning of your importance is something that happens with artists. Why would anybody want to do my work? Why would anybody want to see me do whatever it is? But it's a humility that and a certain strength that keeps you going. Now, what do you think the winning of this award for Melodia is doing for you? What is it bringing to you, that recognition?
I feel like I haven't fully digested it yet. You know, I think the reason I even applied to the competition, to the Melodia competition, I just applied because I had something ready. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. You know, opportunity was there and I happened to have something ready, and you just, okay, there's, when those two things meet, you know, that's the possibility of something lucky happening. And I feel like I got lucky, you know. Maybe mm-hmm. that's not the case. You know, I'm sure there were some very knowledgeable, skillful, you know, people with some wisdom, and they chose me, and I must have had something. So I'm grateful for that. And I feel like I haven't, but obviously I'm still trying to digest that, you know. I think, so in terms of what it does for me as a composer and in my career and everything, maybe two things. One is the external. I'm very honored. I get to say, you know, Melodia performed my music. I got to win this competition. I can add it to my resume. You know, it's such a point of pride. And the reason I even know about Melodia competition is honestly because some of my colleagues who are also composers and friends were past winners, most specifically Dale Trumbore, I know was a past winner. I went to school with Dale, and like to see Dale's name on there, like I have been a fan of hers since before she broke out as a composer. And just to be counted, you know, on a list with her is just like extraordinary. So that was, so that's one benefit is like, I just feel like in some ways it's such a stamp of approval to have made it to be recognized by Melodia and get to compose a piece and win that competition. That's a huge statement for my pride, you know, and then the other thing, but I think the more important thing for me personally is the internal work that this award does on my soul in affirming my work, affirming who I am, affirming, you know, what I have to say compositionally. I can look back on this and remember in those difficult times when I'm like, I don't know if anything I'm writing is good. You know, I can look back and say, well, somebody thought it was good. Somebody gave you a chance, you know, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like when I was a child, you know, or a young person and you're getting encouragement awards, you know, it's like, you know, when you're not a child anymore, I'm way past being a kid. So there aren't opportunities like that, like there used to be, you know, where are you going to get that encouragement? Cause we still need it. We all still need it, you know? So this program that Melodia has does that for people. It's done that for me. And it just gives you that boost that you need. And I'm so thankful that that this program exists, because it validates, it offers that validation that many of us really, really need when we're at this point in our career where we're like, am I good enough? Well, thank you for picking me. I, you know, I'm good enough for somebody. And that's just the best thing that could happen. And a gift for which I'm really grateful.
Well, at this point in time, I have to stop and say we have about maybe 9 more minutes left in this session before we go to the webinar. But I want to say to the participants on the board, and the board is full, if you have a question, I didn't get a chance to tell you what to do, but you just press the number 1, I will see you, and then I'd be able to let you on the air, and you can ask a question of our guests or a comment if you were privileged enough to ever be in the presence of, if you've seen a Melodia concert, if you've seen any of Dr. Robley's work, if you wanted to comment on that, it is the time now, because then she, both of them would have an opportunity to answer you in full, in a full answer. So I'm just giving you an opportunity because, you know, sometimes after the show they go, well, Lenny, you, it was so exciting, but you all talked so much that we didn't get a chance to ask a question. So I say that now, and if in from now into the next few minutes I see a hand come up, I shall recognize it. But until then, I still have a couple of questions. So where do you go from here?
That's hard. I mean, you know, I think you keep going. So for me, I really want to know where I go from here. I don't know. Look, I'm just trying to finish raising my children. And
I don't think
I have.
But yeah. it's such an opportunity that was created out of what we call a dark period of time. The brightness that came out of, you know, how does that then influence you to move forward? Let me just say.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm really grateful for that question. Look, I think what's happening is there's a shift. Maybe I don't know if this happens for everyone, but I've seen it happen for some, and I definitely feel it happening for me. Where I'm like, I have really been fortunate in my career. I've gotten to do a lot of different things, and teaching and performing takes a lot of energy. And I'm glad I was able to do it for as long as I did. And I don't see myself teaching and performing forever and ever and ever. So I'm looking at, you know, maybe the second half of my life as I enter that stage now, being what many may say call a middle-aged person, I guess. I'm looking at the second half of my life, and I don't want to be doing what I was doing before, because I think I'm in a different place now. I'm a different person now in some ways, and I have more to say through this medium, at least I think right now. I think that's what's next for me is figuring out how to say more of what I want to say through my compositions, and hope and learning how to say it in new and dynamic ways. I wanna compose for more than I do a lot of writing for voice because I'm a singer. I really know how to write for voices and for choirs in particular. Mm-hmm. But I want to write for solo voice more. I want to write for instrumental. I want to write instrumental music. I want to write an orchestral piece one day. You know, so I'll be turning my attention towards those goals as I look forward.
Well, we do have.
If I could,
Yes, Cindy. Yes.
Oh well, just with this piece, and I misspoke, it was written for cello, flute, and piano.
Yeah, I forgot to say something. Yeah.
As well as the choir. So it was performed by Melodia Live in November, but it's going to be on the internet. It's going to be a virtual launch on December 16th at 7 p.m. on YouTube Premiere. So everybody will get to hear what I am talking about, this beautiful work. And I think people are going to be looking for Zenaida because she has so much to offer the music world. And look, like, as creative people, we all, you know, we try things, we continue to add to our repertoire, our skills. We try something else, and that's the history, too, of, you know, lots of women composers, you know, who've written for solo, you know, jazz singers, and then written for orchestras, and then written for choirs. And so I think there's just, like, every possibility ahead.
Oh, yes, I do. But I have to ask the question, of course. we have a question from someone on the board, so I'm going to let them in. I ask you to identify yourself, and then please either ask the question or say your comment. So here you are, and hopefully, welcome to Lenny Gossie Straight No Chaser. Please, why don't you identify yourself and tell us what your comment or question is.
Hello, my name is Patricia Snyder, and the question I was going to ask is, how can I hear your music? But Cindy just answered that question. Might you repeat it again so that I can write it down?
Yes.
Cindy?
There will be a virtual launch of the concert. It's called... The Circle Never Ends, and Zenaida's piece is in that concert. Her piece is called From the Stone Age. The launch will be December 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern. And the best way, you have to register for it, and the way to find that is to go to the website of Melodia Women's Choir, NYC. So it's Melodia Women's Choir. NYC.org, and there will be a registration link there, and then you'll be set up for it, and I think you'll love it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed listening to you.
Link.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia, very much. And I haven't finished with you yet, but I just want to make sure that the link that you just gave is Melodia Women's Choir.
Yes, Melodia Women's Choir NYC.org.
Melodia Women's Choir NYC.org.
I'm pretty confident if you Google Women's Choir New York City, it will come up too. Brag a little bit, but I mean, it is a premier women's choir in New York, and we were just
recognized by
New York.
It's funny, I Googled it myself, and it's the premier women's choir in New York.
Well,
right.
You are. Thank you, Patricia.
We were just honored by the New York City Council, you know, which for their work in bringing beautiful music to and Women's Voices to New York City. So,
yes. Patricia, do you have any other questions? Are you okay?
No, that was it. I want to hear her music.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we are almost at the end of this session. We are going to go to the webinar portion of this. And you all both have your connections, do you not?
Yes.
Yes.
I have mine.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And I will, at this point, take a moment. If you give me a quick moment so that I can put it up on the Facebook page so that the audience can join us. I think that we're going to end this in a few minutes to give you a chance to drink a sip of water and take a deep breath, and then we'll go on to the webinar section of it. I thank everybody.
I want to thank you, Lenny. Those were beautiful questions, and I just learned so much. So thank you for your insightful inquiries.
Thank you,
well,
Lenny.
Well, thank you. You're absolutely well. I'm not finished yet. But it's such a fascinating portion of the arts, and I think that one of the things that I try to do here is to try to convince people that there's so many different sectors and so many different sections and facets of the arts that we need to explore and support. And so if we can just get behind that in a consistent way, our lives can be enhanced so much by all the beautiful things that are being done in the arts and all the different kinds of things. So I thank both of you very much for being there, for being able to come answer my questions, being available, making yourself available for that, tolerating all of my nosiness for the last. But I really do think that it is a conversation that not only just will continue on YouTube in a few minutes, but and on the webinar in a few minutes. But it would also be one that will be continuous, Zenaida. I really do think that you must know that there is a need for people to blaze the trail. And that's it's I don't want to put any heavy responsibility on you, but the talent is there, the opportunities are there, and whatever you do, it is going to inspire other people to do. So congratulations to you, first of all, for your award. You're welcome. And secondly, congratulations for taking that opportunity and looking inward and finding out that you are even more than you thought you were in that period of time of gestation, of us being in our homes and just sitting still. And for some people, it really was a period of growth, and it showed that with you. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
And you're welcome. With that, I'm going to end that, ladies and gentlemen who have on the board, all of you who are listening on blogtalkradio.com, all of you who have called in at the number 1-516-453-6063. We will see you next week on a wonderful panel of educators. And thank you for listening, and I will see you on the radio, Lenny Godfrey from Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby. No one can love you the way I do.